one of the things that I did recently, which was a real eye-opener for me, I do all sorts of very interesting and different work over in New York, but I narrated Benazir Bhutto's book, the book that she wrote until it was editing till the morning that she died. I did it as an audiobook. And it's, you know, for all its innocence and, you know, some would say naivete about the world and her wishes for the world and her hopes for the world, that you'd have to read about five other books about the history of Islam, for instance, to get what she condenses into one book. And I just was inspired by it because I guess what I'm coming to say is there's so much. I mean, Islam and its relationship to the West, to me right now, and not just to me, to everyone who writes and works who writes fiction or who writes drama, has to believe that that's the most, possibly the single most important subject there is.
But there are so many other great grand narratives that one could write about and put on the national.
Well, that, I suppose that's
really
what I'm saying.
Exactly.
It's very, very ambitious, but I do feel that writing about domestic violence within the Asian community was, in its own way, rather radical for the time.
Oh, absolutely, and at the time. And looking at Carly's later things as well.
Yeah.
You know, I was talking to Helena about how she directed
it,
the ecstasy, you know. And I'm thinking, so you've got live nudity and you've got a whole queer Asian thing going on there in a small venue to a predominantly Asian audience. Mm. Here, you know,
We dealt with a lot of things. There was a play that we did, Joyety's play, which was a lesbian couple, you know, adopting a child.
Can you tell me about that one? Because, I mean, I've just got the script from it. But I've got no sense of it as a production at all. But I mean, I've got no sense of what it looked or felt like.
It was very beautiful. I'm trying to remember the name of the director.
Anne Evendy.
Okay, because Anne, you know, was an outside director that we brought in just to and she did a beautiful job, I thought. Really gorgeous. Very simple, clean production, very much centered around the relationship between the two women, and was not sensational in any way. It was very real and very. I remember it quite vividly, you know.
What sort of response did it get? Audience response?
Well, I think always when you have a play. You know, what you don't want, and what's interesting if you were allowed to go to larger venues, were that you wouldn't sort of be preaching to the converted, which if you do a play at the Oval House, you're going to get a lot of women coming to see it, and they're going to love it, of course. And we always knew we'd have a regular gig at Oval House because they knew the kind of work we did, and they loved it. But you were preaching to the converted, really, some of the subjects we were dealing with. And obviously the argument that you're going to get is one about quality, and people, I guess, felt that these were playwrights who were at a far enough stage along in their work to be considered for the National or, you know, the RSC, but I don't know.
But that was very much part of Carly's brief, wasn't it, to bring women on? I mean,
yeah.
It's such a generous system. That with now Carly Short's Carly Futures,
yes,
but the way you did it in your dramatic encounters, to actually give people professional support.
Yes.
I mean, it's a huge, I can't imagine, you know, yes. I mean, I know there are new writing courses.
It's the single most important thing that we do. What more important than any individual production, I think, is, and you know how hard it is to write for the stage, to the level of disappointment and, you know, is this idea going to work dramatically? Am I even able to write in this form? It's a very difficult form. It's not a form, you know, people, not surprisingly, move on to television very quickly, and many of our writers have. Tanika and you know, Roxana also, you know, moved in. She works a lot for radio. It's more lucrative and it's easier to do. It's less collaborative, for a start. And, you know, it's the demands are less. And, however, the impact that it has, and people constantly have this argument with me about whether theatre is worth pursuing or not. You know, when I see a great production, I absolutely feel that it is.
And when you see something live, I mean, there's nothing like it in terms of how it moves you, in terms of celluloid.
Absolutely, and particularly also, I think the race thing is huge, and you know, I've always felt as a performer that people very readily buy into you on stage if you are, you know. To take, for instance, the play we did on Gandhi, that was absolutely, although very theatrical, it was directed by Tony Clark, who is an interesting one. He did a number of productions with, I mean, I've worked a lot with Tony over the years. He's a good friend and he runs the Hampstead Theatre right now. Directed it very theatrically, very stylistically, but somehow I felt that responding to the cast and the subject matter couldn't have worked as well in any other medium than on stage. For that particular play, than many others, you know. I mean, you look at Peter Brook's work, I mean, the absolute, you know, pinnacle of, there's no way of getting those like, kinds of ideas across other than, you know, the way he does it, and the way he chooses truly diverse casts.
When he did the Mahabharata, because I know Tara was doing something very similar, the same year, but mine did mine just before. Did that influence the way Asian theatre was being produced at the time? Did it have an influence on you at all?
I mean,
because there were these narratives all the way along that you get. I don't know whether you saw Tim Supple's Midsummer Night's Dream last year that was done, you know, with this bi-imported Indian cast that it had. There's things like that and Rafter, you know, that go on, you know, and even Bombay Dreams that go on as. Sort of, I think of them as appropriated Asian things for the Asian dollar, you know, it would be the NRI dollar or whatever it would be.
Yeah.
Which is, and the aesthetics are very, very different too.
Yeah.
Well, either, you know, Kali Tamasha, Tara, any of those guys you know, I mean, they're very, very different.
Yeah.
And I presumed that there was some of that going on with Mahabharata at the time.
Well, you know, you can't argue with Peter Brook's aesthetic, and I never would. I think he is a real. He is theatre. He isn't doing anything purely to make money. I think he's completely devoted to his art. And I also believe, and I've met him a few times, I auditioned for the Mahabharata a couple of times, once in French and once in English. I don't think that the Mahabharata can be compared to any other, you know, large-scale Indian or South Asian-influenced drama which are trying to get an Asian audience to come to the theatre.
When you say that, do you mean his version of it?
Yes, his Mahabharata, because I think people, no matter what text he chose, people would always come to see his work. The fact that he chose the Mahabharata and that it was so incredibly important to him and had been a dream of his for so many years to do, first in French and then in English, and to tour around the world, is very indicative of that. I mean, this was not something he was doing to cash in on anything. So, and I think anyone would go and see his work, you know, of any type. But I think he's very different. You know, I almost think it took Peter Brook to show, and you know, he left this country because he was so incensed by the fact that he was not properly funded in it. He went to live and work in Paris. But I think that it took somebody like him to show the British theatre establishment in a way with the Mahabharata what one could achieve.
Open the gates a little.
Yeah, what could be achieved, and the fact that these stories are completely universal and completely theatrical and marvellous.
Yeah.
You know.
Let me ask you in terms of that moving away. It's not quite clear to me how much contact you had with Carly after you went to New York.
In the first few years, quite a lot.
I know you've come back and you've been involved in those workshops and that
absolutely.
Sort of thing. And didn't
performing and directing,
I thought you did.
Performing and directing,
So how was that for you, coming
Oh, it would really
do
very
you have
good.
A sense of ownership still with the. You sound now like you still have a sense of ownership. Well,
no, less and less so, because I feel that you have to let. I mean,
well, invested interest, maybe.
Well, one, yeah, very much invested interest. I'm very interested. I sort of met Janet a couple of years ago and talked to her about which direction and whether there was any crossover, whether we could do work in the US, which I'd be very interested in trying to facilitate, which isn't easy. Something I was going to say about talking about things like Bombay Dreams and those kinds of plays is that I think the kind of identity that a company like Carly has now is very British and Asian.
Yes.
You see,
absolutely.
Which Bombay Dreams absolutely is not. Mm-hmm. You see, and the more of that work in this, in the way that everything that one sees around now and how London, a city like London or any big city in the UK changes. With influences of so many different cultures, I think the theatre now is much more. We are part of theatre tradition in this country now.
Yeah.
I mean, which is almost sounds like in conclusion, but we are.
No, I mean, absolutely, but you know, that Bombay Dreams is Andrew Lloyd Webber West End tourist audience. It's not
right.
It's not a Carly British
right.
audience.
Right, and it's not going to lead to anything.
No.
And that was, as I said to you, my most important goal with Carly, and it was hard because you're just a small cog. I mean, you hope that that's something that's going to be taken on. And I always did feel, I was actually working in a soap opera at the time that I started Carly, and I gave that up because I
was
going to
say, have you done 2 years at Coronation Street?
No, it was only one.
So you wanted to do
like
that's
like
an enormous.
It was huge to give up. I just really felt very, very idealistic, and I didn't enjoy working that kind of episodic TV. It was something that I fell into. It wasn't enjoyable for me. I also, you know, anyway, a number of reasons. But I really felt that the work that I was doing with Carly was probably the most important work I would ever do. You know, I saw it as something that had some lasting value.
Yeah.
But
a big move.
Oh, yeah, well.
Well, you
yes
do move
no.
for a paying job as well, and also, you know, Coronation
yes
Street
no.
was huge.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, but,
I suppose so. It's where, as I said, where you feel your talent can be best used.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to be part of a much bigger organisation? Yeah. Fewer, I mean, I didn't have children then, and all that's, you know, so that was much easier decision for me to make. Or do you try and start something new?
Yeah.
If you feel it's important. And, you know, I didn't. I mean, Roxana's, she's very kind, but, I mean, she worked incredibly hard, and she continues to. I mean, Roxana's a real pioneer, and her work, I've seen her work mature, and I've seen it, you know, branch out in so many different areas.
And
she's such an interesting writer.
As always.
Always. I'm very interested in women, and, you know, that's it's not fashionable, and it's not, I mean, you know, okay, IU's work is being produced at the National, it's fantastic, and I love IU, but, you know, I've known IU since he was an actor many years ago, and I don't find his work terribly ambitious. I don't find his reach in what he tries to write about. It's always about his family, and I know his family in Salford. I don't think he touches on some of the global issues that a writer like Roxana does. So, you know, I wouldn't know where to go with someone like him, whereas with Roxana, I know that there are a number of ideas that she has. So she, you know, constantly writing, partly to do also with the fact that she grew up and was educated in Pakistan. So,
it's a huge difference.
It's a huge difference. I was born in India, you know, I wasn't born in England, and I think it does make a huge difference. But I think also the expectations sometimes with male writers are fewer. To take your point, Hanif and also IU, they have a style of writing which is very personal and, you know, about their own. Themselves and lives, and that's what's expected of them, and they do very well on that.
Talking of men, can I ask you about the Asian Property Theatre?
Yeah.
Because I have the stuff and I've looked through it, but I haven't done it recently, so my head's a bit rusty. But I was thinking I must ask you, how much I remember seeing your signature all over things, and I'm thinking that yourself and Harmed did an awful lot of the admin together, as far as what was going on. Tizzer, I did you with that one.
Yeah.
So how did you get involved with that particular bunch of people?
We used to meet...
Were you there from the beginning as well?
We used to meet, I think theatre was only actually one of their interests. But Harmage and I, it was our chief interest at the time. But I think, as you know, Farouk had, you know, a lot of other interests. He was the commissioning editor at Channel 4 around that time. So obviously he had a lot of interest in television.
Halfway through it, he went off, didn't he?
And the other writer's name.
Dilip Hero.
Yeah, Dilip was there, and another writer who we did a production of his play, and
was he the chap that wrote the Bangra dance?
Yes.
Yeah, I can't think who was.
Yes,
name,
and he had his own production company at the time, a film production company.
It wasn't Raj Patel, was it?
No.
It's okay. I have his name.
So, I don't know, I mean, it was interesting in terms of throwing ideas around, but it wasn't really, you know, the commitment that is involved in theatre was not really there.
Because it looks through that, when you look through the minutes, which I just raced through last year, I remember thinking, if only these people could stay in the room long enough, they would do more. But there seemed to be a chasing of, there's lots of letters that say we've moved to new premises, or we have a new administrator, or, you know, the reason why we're late is, and it seems, you know,
difficult
to get
minutes,
a group of people together, you know.
Because they all had other careers, you know. Yeah, they were older, they're also generation older than I was at the time, you know, very established in various fields of writers and filmmakers.
So which of those productions were you involved with? There was, I think, the Giovanni stuff.
Yeah.
They did Prim, and I can't remember. Is it Giovanni, the other one? Those were the bilingual pieces.
We did, yeah. I was in the play at the Soho Poly, that's what it's still called, the Soho Poly. Yeah. It was a double bill. Actually, I saw James McDonald recently in New York. He directed one of them. Hetty directed ours, and I said, you know, I reminded him of that. He's turned into an extremely good director, I think. That was great.
So have you done bilingual work before then, publicly, like this, at a professional level?
I don't think I had, actually.
No.
I don't think I had, and it was very interesting. You know, very, very interesting and challenging.
How did it work, the bilingual?
That within the same sentence you'd have, you know, rather in the way sometimes people speak to one another for whom English may not be their first language, that they fall in and out. But what we had to try and do was keep the meaning of the sentence clear, even though it was in two languages.
Yeah. And the theatricality of it.
Yeah, so it kept it very simple. Mm. The story was very simple. You had also, but almost to be able to understand it without really following it verbally.
There is that thing as well, isn't there, about the new writing, you know, that wish to show their British Asian experience here and now, rather than an adaptation of a European classic or something.
Yes.
Which you get so strongly in the new writing.
Yeah, oh sure, absolutely.
Very present.
Absolutely, yeah. There was always such a vitality about you know, when you do reflect these kids' own lives, it was great to hear what they had to say about it, you know. They always engaged with it, you know, which was great. Whereas you have a feeling that, you know, certain young people's lives, and I felt this particularly about the young girls and young women, was difficult, was finding, and what I felt it was really essential is finding work that had meaning for their own lives, and not showing them, you know, although of course they could relate to any, you know, classic piece, but that something that would that you felt was for them and about them. Mm.
Yeah, no.
There's nothing like it.
You get the feel of that, you know, when you look through this material. And that's why I say, you know, when you look at something like the ecstasy, you think, Jesus, were you really doing this then? You know, when people are so precious about venues.
That was a news play, wasn't it? Yeah. A news play, the ecstasy, yeah. I mean, this is the thing. I mean, absolutely, there were no holds barred in terms of what do you want to write about.
But I wondered that as well. You know, I said to Helena, were you aware how tricky this might have been with Asian audiences? And she said, no, I wasn't, to be honest with you. Yeah. I just did it the same as I would approach any play. And it was Roxana saying, you might just want to be a bit careful on this front. You know, but I think possibly that combination has worked.
It's very good.
If you brought in an Asian director, not that there were many female Asian directors on the tour, but...
They would have said, I can't do this,
Certainly, very unlikely to have gone ahead with a nude
I know.
What was it like in terms of decision making with ACT? Because there's a lot of big names in there. I mean, there's a lot of people who have a lot of work going on at the time anyhow.
I'll tell you, it was kind of frustrating because I really didn't feel, I was very much the lone woman in that setup, and I really didn't feel that they were in any way interested in doing Lee's work.
Because
wasn't
Lee Sayal around as well at that time?
Not really.
Yeah, I think she's one of the only other female names I've seen.
Yeah, not really. She was never, she was in film. Yeah. But I don't think she was, I don't remember her as having very much... to say, and I, you know, as I do everything, I took it on board and saw it as a way of perhaps bringing some new voices into the forum, and it really didn't. I don't think Naz wrote any other plays after that. I don't think Farouk did. I was in a play of Farouk's that we did called Vigilantes, which was an interesting play, which was an ACT production.
Yeah, that is there, isn't it?
Which was at the Arts Theatre, and it was good, actually. It was an interesting play. It was set in the East End about a film crew who go, a Channel 4 film crew, it's very close to the bone, really, who go to document the lives of East End Bengali kids and how it all kind of backfires with this young journalist who goes in there hoping to do a sort of expose type story, and it's just going, doing it for all the wrong reasons. And really interesting, actually. I saw in New York, thank you, a play called Black Watch. Did you hear about that production? Just thinking about we were talking about.
Who's that guy?
It was done at. It's a Scottish company called.
I wondered, would it be called Black Watch?
Yeah, it was about the Black Watch. It was about the regiment, it was a really, really interesting production. But I think the reason I'm talking about it is that it's the same kind of thing of bringing a very small community out of there, and basically how many people in British wars over the years, how much that particular regiment contributed in terms of men, generations of families, and right up until the war of Iraq, because that's just what they do, they're fighters, they're warriors, And it was an amazing production, but it used that same device of bringing a journalist in to talk to the soldiers, and using that as a jumping off point for telling a big story about the regiment.
How did the vigilantes one backfire on the journalist to go?
Because she ended up being raped, or not raped, but I mean, sexually assaulted by one of the guys.
She wasn't Bengali herself.
She was, yeah. She was. Yeah. And then, she was being used as a sort of device to get into that community and penetrate that community. And, it was just.
But in that sense, Farouk was very much writing about the environment he was
absolutely.
Because he did all that.
He's loathed by the Bengali community, and still is loathed by the Bengali community in the East End. So it's kind of a difficult political situation.
The only other thing I wanted to ask you about was Borderline. How was that approach? I mean, I rather imagine that working on that is quite different to doing anything for Carly or was it the first major Asian thing that the Royal Court had done?
Absolutely. Hanif, I don't know that he was actually a member of the youth theatre, but he was only a few years older than me, and he had done some plays which had got a lot of attention. He'd done a play at the Soho Poly, he'd done a play upstairs at the Royal Court called The King and Me, about a boy, a young Asian boy, and his obsession with Elvis Presley. And I think Max Sever-Clark had taken a trip to India, Max, the artistic director of the court at that time, and really wanted to do a play about South Asians. It's a fantastic kind of political... you could write a whole book just about Borderline and that production, really. It was done by a company called Joint Stock, who were very sort of seminal company. They shared space with Monsters Regiment for a while on Top of the Road. They're a cooperative company, worked very, made decisions collectively, based on a book. David Hare had done some of their early plays, and one of his plays had been an adaptation of a book called Pan Shen. And a Pan Shen means, you know, you sit in a circle and you discuss until you reach a consensus. And they'd taken that so literally. I mean, this tells you that it was like a 70s thing. I was coming in at the very tail end of it. But it was very much that you arrived at a consensus no matter how long it took. And that was everyone, when you told them you were doing a play for Joint Stock at that time, when it had already sort of, the heyday of Joint Stock had passed in a way, it was, oh God, let's have a meeting, you know, because everything, you can't work in that way anymore, you know, it's just not. But it was a very particular way of working, and one, because I was so young, that was my formative, that was very much my formative time, and I thought, oh God, this is fantastic. You know, my opinion really counts for something, and we all, you know, it's an ideal.
Yeah.
The reality of it is that it wasn't, because it never is. There always, you know, we had an artistic director and he made his own decisions. And what was slightly bizarre and interesting about...
I didn't realise there was a male artist. Because I think of Carol Churchill and people like that with
Joint Stock. Joint Stock was started by Bill Gaskell and Max Sever-Clark.
Yeah.
And they were really the powerhouses behind them. And Bill, they had split at that time, but Max was still very involved with the company, and Bill to some extent. But the writers that they kind of pioneered were David Hare, Carol Churchill, obviously, and David Edgar. It'll come to me. But the idea with Joint Stock and some of the best work, they were the company that I really regarded very highly. They were a real ensemble company. Everybody would play everything. You would usually have a company of six actors who would work together on a given subject. The writer would then take the information that they give, usually based on improvisation with a particular community or around a particular subject, bring it at the end of the day back to the rehearsal room, and the writer would write notes, and then over a six or 8 week period, you'd take a break, and that's why it would never work anymore, because you'd lose all your actors.
Yeah.
But then they'd reconvene when there was a play, and everyone would just accept whatever they were given to play. So it was really fantastic and really ideal in a way. Very occasionally you'd lose people because they got, you know, more lucrative work, or because they're occasionally not happy with what they were offered to play. That didn't happen often though.
Mm.
Usually people accepted, and it meant that, you know, if you had six actors and you had three men and three women usually, that you'd have maybe a dozen characters that they played between them, and you'd usually, you know, divvy it up, and it showed tremendous faith in the idea of the ensemble and that you had the best company that you possibly could. But with Borderline, it was really difficult politically, because what you had in an ideal situation was great. You had my mom and dad being played by white actors, Deborah Finley and David Beams. And yet you had me not playing any other character except the central character, who was this young woman called Amina. And that was because the story was very much about her and her dilemma. And I was fine with it, because it was a great role and very interesting. She had a great journey. but I just thought, well, why? I mean, why couldn't I have played Susan the White Journalist, for instance, who was played by Leslie Mandel? Everyone was fantastic in it, but I just, and the idea of engaging really 100% with the community that you were portraying, and we all did, was great, but how it looked was really as though the performers were really given a stretch by playing these characters, and yet our three Asian actors were not playing anything but Asian characters, you see. So we weren't given a stretch, we were just being what we are. And I mentioned it to Matt at the time, young as I was, I said, how about that? And he said, to have you play anything else, which is an interesting quote, would just be perverse.
Having worked in that setup all the time where you all juggle roles between you, come to do that and all of a sudden there's a colour difference.
There absolutely was. And some people, you know, it was such a good play and so tight and really stands the test of time. I'd love to see a production of that play to this day because it was really up to the minute.
Was Hanif aware of the process that John Stott usually...
Oh yeah, absolutely, 100%.
And so when it was cast and directed in this way, did he bring the same objections that you did?
He was very young himself and I think just wanted to... I mean, it served the way these things ended up, served the play very well. Everybody was very, very good. You know, had we all then gone on to do other work with Joint Stock, which redressed that balance, I would have been very happy, but it, of course, never happened.
But it's the same thing, you know, when you see an Asian King Lear, you know, you can see all sorts of spectacle,
oh, yeah,
things, but
yeah,
in terms of playing a straight role, you know, being able to...
Yeah. I mean, that's only starting to happen now, I think.
Well, it is, but many people say, you know, even now, you're much more likely to see a black actor playing a white role than an Asian.
Yeah.
That halfway house.
Yeah.
Are we or aren't we?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And some people, like, I know Jatinder was very, very unhappy about that production because of that. He felt that all the cast should have been Asian. And actually, if I'd been a little more mature, so I would have thought so too.
Yeah.
You know, I would have said, you know, why go the whole hog if you're going to do this? Go out on a limb and hire an entirely Asian cast for this.
I can't remember time-wise. When was Borderline? Was
1981.
Oh, so it was the first of the big Asian ones at the big venues.
Yeah. It was very well received.
The national ones, of course, were later then.
Yeah, extremely well received. It was given a lot of credence. That was the summer that first time there were riots in Brixton and Birmingham, and it was and of course that all happened in the period that Hanif was writing, so he couldn't not address that. And that was what was so great about Joint Stock, is that, you know, if things happened with, you know, to do with the subject that you were working with, that you had to incorporate them in your writing, and he did. So it was quite a political piece, in a way that you just think, wow, nobody would write this play now because it's, you know, it has this young girl cutting her hair off and making petrol bombs, you know.